Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. This is Allison Loudermilk, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, science writer at HowStuffWorks.com. And you know, it's really hard not to love Stephen Hawking.
Indeed, he's very lovable.
Yeah.
And intelligent.
Yeah, especially when you write, podcast, edit, live and breathe science, at least from 9 to 6 for a living, then he's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, he starts to approach idol status.
But like we were discussing earlier, it's often easy to like fall into the trap of just thinking, all right, this is a brilliant brain in a disabled body, and then sort of like dismiss a lot of like whatever he's talking about.
What are you talking about dismiss? Who's dismissing Hawking? Who has the audacity to dismiss?
I'm not saying, not like logically saying like Hawking, but more like people are just kind of like, oh yeah, Stephen Hawking, he's brilliant, but without really giving a lot of thought to like what he's, you know, actually why he's brilliant, or much less thinking about
the man
that this is a real dude.
And he's more than a theoretical physicist.
Yeah, and he's
a pretty
interesting guy.
Yeah, so today we thought we'd walk you through a couple of things that you might not know about Stephen Hawking. Despite the title, Hanging with Stephen Hawking, he's not actually here in the studio. He didn't respond to our interview requests. Imagine that. this is based on an article that Jane McGrath, former co-host of Stuff You Missed in History Class back in the day, and she wrote an article for HowStuffWorks called 10 Cool Things You Didn't Know About Stephen Hawking. So if you are really into Hawking and you want to go check it out after you listen to our podcast, do it.
Yeah. We also have a quiz about Stephen Hawking. We have two quizzes about Stephen Hawking, I think. So if you feel like, Stephen Hawking, I already know that stuff, well, bring it. You know, come to the website and test that knowledge out.
Okay. So what is this theoretical physicist known for? What do you know him for? Black holes, right?
Yeah. Black hole research and also the whole limitless universe thing where
the boundless universe.
Yeah. Boundless universe.
We'll get into that in a little bit.
Yeah. A little bit. We don't turn off the podcast. We're not going to get heavy into that, but we'll discuss it.
So. Let's start out with the day of his birth. It's kind of handy because this guy was born 300 years to the day after Galileo died on January 8th, 1942. So that's kind of handy. I did think about looking up to see who died on my birthday to see if I could somehow link myself to a big figure in the past, but I didn't have time before the podcast.
Oh, that's a bit of a letdown. I was really getting excited. We'll save that for another podcast. But yeah, that's pretty big. You know, it kind of implies that he had some big shoes to fill. And, you know, some people would say he kind of did.
But interestingly enough, this guy has never received a Nobel.
It is interesting, yeah.
I mean, so he's one of the most famous physicists out there, one of the most famous scientists out there. But mm-hmm.
And he's gotten lots of other awards and prizes and recognitions, but not the Nobel.
Yeah. So inducted into the Royal Society at the wee age of in his 30s. I think he was 32. He was a relative young feller. Although a lot of people who are making their names in math and science, they say have already done like their critical work when they're pretty young, which I always find distressing because, you know, what if my best years are gone?
Your best years of scientific research.
What if my brilliance is gone? So another interesting thing is he's held the Cambridge University's Lucasian Professor of Mathematics position. And this is pretty darn prestigious, especially when you consider that Sir Isaac Newton was one of the guys who has held it, and Charles Babbage. And do you know who Babbage is? I needed a little refresher on Babbage.
It sounds familiar.
I was just talking about him with Jonathan Strickland of Tech mm-hmm. Stuff this morning.
Oh, then he has something to do with computers.
He does. Ah. He does. He was essentially the guy who led to the modern computer.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, computers are great, but has he received an award from the Pope?
Indeed. I'm not sure Babbage has, but Hawking has. He and Roger Penrose did. The Pius 11 gold medal for science. I, you know, we have to do some sort of something about the Pope giving out medals to science, because this was curious. I'd not heard of this. Had you?
Yeah, I was familiar a little bit with it. I know for one thing, we're talking about Galileo. Galileo did not get an award from the Pope, at least not in his day and time.
Yeah, and Galileo certainly did not get the Presidential Medal of Freedom from U.S. President Barack Obama in 2009.
Yeah, what's up, Obama? Why are you not giving Galileo's dues?
I don't know. I think he'd take him even after his death. Of course, Hawking is no stranger to the media. Have you guys seen him? Have you checked him out in any of his many appearances on TV or in film?
Yeah, I've seen the Futurama episode that he's in where he like teams up with Al Gore and a few other notable celebrities to like go back in time and or go into the future to like save the world. And so it's pretty funny.
So this episode really made an impression on you.
Yeah, like yeah. Well, I do remember specifically that Philip Fry, the kind of idiot main character in Futurama, he discovers like a cosmic analogy and calls it a fry hole. And then Hawking like steals it from him and calls it a Hawking hole.
That's good stuff. Yeah. He's been on The Simpsons 4 separate times.
Oh, wow.
I heard the connection there was that his daughter Lucy knew one of the scriptwriters from The Simpsons. And Hawking had a funny quote and he said, as many people know me through The Simpsons as through science. Which is kind of hilarious. And he also said Simpsons is the best thing on American TV.
Yeah, he's a big fan. You can kind of tell a lot about somebody if they have at least dug The Simpsons at one point or another.
I have a friend who swears that she's never seen The Simpsons, which I find to be a lie. How can that be?
She has
a TV.
She has seen TV.
She has seen The Simpsons. How could you not have seen The Simpsons?
Yeah.
And then, of course, you wrote a recent article that was based around his discovery series, Into the Universe with Stephen Hawking. And this got a lot of press because he was talking about some things that people didn't want to necessarily hear about aliens.
Yeah, and we did a podcast, yeah, talking about this a little bit. But it basically boiled down to it was a slow news week. Oil hadn't, like, leaked up and polluted the Gulf yet. So everyone was like, what are we going to talk about today?
Hawking
said something about aliens.
About aliens, right.
Yeah.
Here's something you might not have known about Hawking, along with his whole appearances on TV and in film. He's a children's author.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of excited about the books. So he's written two with his daughter, Lucy Hawking.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one is George's Secret Key to the Universe. And it's supposed to be part of a trilogy built around this little boy, George. And the second one is out, too. It's called George's Cosmic Treasure Hunt. So I was curious because I was, I have some kids, know some kids. Got to get them presents sometimes, you know, and things roll around, birthdays and such. And these sounded like good books to get kids.
Yeah, I mean, it's supposedly, like, and I haven't read them, but supposedly each one, like, deals with, like, real cosmological, you know, issues. Like, they explain kind of how the universe works in, you know, far simpler terms.
Yeah, they did an interview with ABC, Lucy and her dad did. And Lucy says, it was clear to me that there was a wealth of science fiction available for children, but not very much quote-unquote science fact. Science fiction can be exciting and very gripping, but it doesn't tell us anything about the universe in which we live. We wrote an adventure that is based on real science rather than on fantasy. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, do you think that I kind of disagree with her on the whole science fiction thing not being able to tell us about the universe?
It can, but I just don't know how much. I think maybe her point is more when it comes to children's science fiction, you know?
I suppose.
You know, like, and I can't think of any, like, young adult sci-fi titles. Well, I don't know. I guess for me, when I was a young adult, like, the sci-fi titles that I was into were things like Asimov. So yeah, if you look at it that way, it's like, you know, Asimov is perfectly fine for many young people to read. And, you know, and I think reading Asimov has inspired, you know, many scientists and children who just, you know, went on to other things but remained interested in it.
But the book that Hawking is really well known for is, of course, Brief History of Time.
Right.
Did you ever read it?
I don't know if I've sat down and read it cover to cover, but I've definitely hit it up here and there for, you know, articles or, you know, to answer little questions in my head. They made a movie out of it as well, which I have not seen. But
yeah, and there's Hawking's in tons of documentaries. He's written all sorts of stuff. But here's something. This guy, this vaunted science celebrity, maybe not always the best student.
Yeah, this is everybody loves these stories.
Everybody does love these stories.
Because whether you're a kid who just got a C, you know, in social studies, or you're a mom or a dad.
Yeah, you
who
brandish
just
this argument when you present your bad report card to your parents. Hey, you know, Steve Jobs never finished high school.
Yeah, or like when Einstein was a kid, he robbed a convenience store.
And Hawking wasn't even really that smart.
Yeah. Bill Gates stole the painting. You know, he turned out great.
But as it turns out, Hawking could actually get it done in the grades department. When he took his scholarship exams, he aced them, and he had a near perfect score on the physics portion.
Yeah, when it came down to, you know, basically being a situation where you're not going to get to go to the college you need to go to unless you ace this test, then he ponied up and did it.
So that's interesting because he didn't really want to study physics. Physics represented a compromise between he and his dad, good old Frank.
Yeah, his dad wanted him to be a doctor.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's a lot of parents want their kids to go into medicine.
Yeah, make the big money, right? But then he was more interested in mathematics, like the hard, cold, you know, well, maybe not cold. You know, if you're in love with mathematics, it's not really a cold thing. But
numbers can be warm and fuzzy
if
you understand them.
Yeah, they can be your best friends if you're a mathematician. But he was there's a lot of potential in mathematics. There's a lot of, exact, calculation. And I think he was really into that.
He wasn't so psyched on biology. He found it rather imprecise.
Yeah.
That's what Jane was writing. So he ultimately wound up attending Oxford and majoring in physics. And when it came to figure out what physics path he wanted to go down, he chose cosmology.
Yeah, the big questions, the big overall. What is the universe?
Yeah, he's a big picture guy instead of particle physics. So why? There's a pretty interesting quote. He gave a 2002 lecture to Cambridge's Center for Mathematical Sciences, and he said, talking about particle physics, but I felt that elementary particles at that time was too like botany. That's kind of rough. Kind of a rough take.
Not very fair to the botanist either, but
definitely. Even more interesting is this man who we've come to know in a wheelchair, albeit a crazy advanced wheelchair. He was a rower.
Yeah.
First year at Oxford, he went out for the crew team.
Yeah, he was. He was kind of like he wasn't like one of like the muscle rowers, but
no,
he was
a coxswain. He's the one who sat in the front because he was kind of a small guy even then. And so his petite build was good for sitting in the front of the boat when you shout directions, row, row, get me lunch, or whatever you yell at your rowers.
So yeah, it's important, I think, to realize that this guy was once a virile young dude out there steering, if not rowing, a boat.
Well, do they row? I mean, they kind of direct.
Do they? Well, I mean,
he's not steering. He's not like, wiggling his bum from side to side to steer the boat.
But still, he's out there, it's physical exertion. It's probably cold and,
Well, so he had to drop it because rowing, as some of you guys probably know, it cuts into your schoolwork, all that practice. It's a fairly intense sport. So he had to drop it.
Yeah.
But once upon a time, Stephen Hawking was a rower. Let's get to the family life. There's some pretty good stuff there.
Yeah, like the author of our article about Hawking, his wife's name was Jane.
Yeah.
First wife.
He met his wife Jane at a New Year's party. Wife Jane, according to Jane, It's funny. His wife Jane thought that Hawking was a funny guy, and she admired his independence.
And the sense of humor is something that remains with him. I mean, obviously he's cool with showing up on The Simpsons and Futurama, but you see other things he's written, and even the TV show on Discovery, the Hawking's Universe. There's a certain sense of humor to that as well.
Yeah, he has a pretty sharp wit.
Yeah.
He's good with comebacks.
And it wasn't long after he met Jane, though, that he ended up going to the doctor. He was tripping a lot. He was feeling kind of clumsy, you know, like there was something wrong with his, like, motor skills.
Mm-hmm.
And he was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease, also known as ALS.
Yeah. Here, I'll just attempt it. Amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. And that was at the wee age of 22.
Yeah, and they were not giving that good of a forecast either. They thought he maybe lived to like 24 or something, right?
Yeah, not necessarily long to even finish his PhD.
Yeah.
He was then at Cambridge. So according to Mayo Clinic, in case you guys want to know the deal on ALS, if you don't remember, signs of ALS begin with your muscle twitching. Maybe you have weakness in an arm or even slurring of speech. So that would kind of explain the clumsiness. Mm-hmm. And then eventually the cells that control muscle activity, you know, good stuff like eating, swallowing, breathing, all that stuff are affected, and you essentially become paralyzed. It's degenerative.
Yeah, it occurs in 1 to 3 people per 100,000, and the most common cause of death if you have ALS is a respiratory failure.
So you guys might remember back in 2009, there were a lot of news stories when Hawking went to the hospital and he had a fairly serious respiratory infection, but he obviously survived it. And interestingly enough, he's Britain's oldest survivor of ALS, small feat, because the life expectancy after you're diagnosed is a few years, not decades.
Yeah, like I think like 3 to 5 tops, and he's been just defying the odds like for decades.
So despite the diagnosis, he was like, whatever, I'm getting engaged to my Lady Jane, and he did.
Yeah, and she pointed out in an interview, I think, or maybe it was in her book, that also there was like this atmosphere of, you know, that we could have a nuclear war at any moment.
We could die tomorrow.
You know, it could all be over. So all the more reason, it's like, you know, the person I love, you know, has this condition, but, you know, And then everything might, you know, go up in flames tomorrow. But, you know, right now, we've got this moment. Let's make the best of it.
It's romantic.
Yeah, it is.
They lasted for a long time, but the two wound up splitting in 1990. And then, of course, Hawking married his nurse, Elaine Mason, 5 years later. So this caused some chattering among the folks that like to talk about this stuff. And Hawking has since split from Mason as well. And he has a couple grandkids now, too.
Yeah, this is actually really interesting. I ran across another tidbit about Hawking's musical taste. Given his, you know, his own, you know, musical explorations, he's really big into like Wagner and some classical stuff, right? But he was hanging out with his son Tim, and his Tim was listening to a lot of Depeche Mode.
He wound up going to the Depeche Mode concert. Yeah,
yeah? And Hawking says that he like actually really digs Depeche Mode now. So that's pretty cool. I like the idea of like here, you know, him sitting around, kind of jamming out.
Yeah, but he also said his ears were ringing for maybe 24 hours after. So that's, you know, but if you're gonna rock hard, sometimes you gotta roll with the punches.
Yeah.
Right, well, Hawking?
Yeah, and come on, like some of those Depeche Mode songs are pretty somber, you know, so you should be able to roll with that.
Indeed. So wife Jane eventually wrote this tell-all about what it was like to be married to the brilliant scientist, and it was called Music to Move the Stars. 610 pages of detail on what it was like to be married to Stephen Hawking. And from what I gather from reading some of the reviews, it wasn't all positive. I can't imagine what it would be like to live with such a ridiculously smart mind. I mean, does it cause you to, you know, lack faith in your own judgment? Do you question yourself? I mean, there have to be all sorts of issues that come up with a relationship like that. Or maybe it's just two people.
Yeah. I guess I would tend to, you know, it's always been my experience that if somebody's really smart about some things, they're probably
pretty dumb about
pretty
others.
Dumb about others, you know, so.
It all evens out.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe so, maybe so. Anyway, he has since reconciled with wife Jane, and she was at his bedside when he had that respiratory infection back in 2009.
But let's depart from his personal life before we get too many angry emails.
Let's get back to the physics.
Yeah, in a nutshell, the boundless universe theory that he's you know attributed with, it boils down to, like, think of the globe, right?
Yes.
All right. Now, if you start running around in a circle, you know, on the globe, or not in a circle, but like you start just running, then you would eventually loop around to where you were before. And then you'd loop around to where you were before, and you're just going forever, you know?
You're never going to run off.
Right. It's limitless, at least in a 2D, two-dimensional framework. Oh, man, we should have called in Flat Stanley for this.
We should have called in Flat Stanley. He was busy.
Yeah.
I think he was going to Josh and Chuck's trivia night today.
Yeah, his agent wouldn't return my call. But but yeah, so in a very two-dimensional sense, a globe is limitless. So the boundless universe deal is taking that idea and expanding it to a 4D universe.
And the universe,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, where you have, you know, three spatial dimensions and one of time.
Right. So universe as a contained entity, but having no boundaries. So I think that your analogy really helps to kind of frame that in my mind and hopefully in listeners' minds too. It's contained, yet it has no boundaries. So that's tricky.
Yeah, it's a pretty big topic. We may have to cover that one on its own in a future podcast.
So what about the black hole business? What about the black hole bet?
Oh, yeah. So this is interesting. It had to do with whether information is lost in a black hole.
Right. So that's what Hawking said back in 1975. He essentially said that, well, black holes, they're not exactly black. I mean, they're radiating energy. I mean, because we tend to think of them as these yawning maws of blackness, sucking everything within, you know, remotely close into it, right?
Yeah, past the event horizon.
Tremendous cosmological forces.
Right.
So Hawking thought black holes radiated energy, but here's the tricky thing. At the same time, he said that information was lost in a black hole. So it's creating this nice little paradox.
Yeah, and U.S. theoretical physicist John Preskill did not agree. He even made a bet with Hawking, as well as with Caltech theorist Kip Thorne in 97. That information can, in fact, escape from black holes.
And this was nice because Preskill's idea didn't break the laws of quantum mechanics as Hawking and Thorne were doing. And so eventually 2004 rolls around, Hawking said, yeah, Preskill was right.
Yeah, and
again, I'm not sure that Thorne has conceded, actually.
Yeah, I also couldn't find, what kind of money was at stake here.
I did.
Yeah.
There was a encyclopedia, and the encyclopedia was to be given to the loser so the loser could look up information that he wasn't so sure about.
Oh, so it was just kind of like a joke insult kind of gag, yeah.
These are the kind of bets that scientists have.
They weren't like, it wasn't like a finger or anything. Okay, that's good. So as we mentioned earlier, Hawking also has talked a good deal about the possibility of extraterrestrial life in our universe. And that always gets some, you know, when you have a dude that's considered by many to be one of the, if not the most brilliant mind out there, scientific mind, and he starts talking about
aliens
actually existing, you know, people take notice and they run with it on Slow News Weeks. And he has said some really cool stuff. He thinks that
sure, it's a big universe out there. We might not be alone. But his big point has been that it might be primitive life, not necessarily intelligent life. In fact, he famously quipped, that sense of humor again, that intelligent life has yet to occur on Earth at NASA's 50th anniversary lecture series. So, yes, life might be out there, but it might be primitive. And his another point of his, which is well received, was that those aliens, they might not be DNA-based. Like we've talked about before in the podcast, we tend to think of aliens being somewhat similar to humans. Who's to say?
Yeah, pure energy beings, you know, the sky's kind of the limit, you know, ultimately.
Right. So if these aliens aren't DNA-based, then they could bring a whole host of new diseases that could just lay waste to the human population and life on Earth.
And as we mentioned in the Into the Universe with Stephen Hawking show on Discovery, He discussed at length how if intelligent life on another planet followed the same evolutionary ascent as human life.
Sure.
And if it even resembled our cultural advances, then we would be looking at some pretty scary aliens who would probably not be pleasant to meet.
Right. They might not be looking to make friends, but rather mine the Earth of its available resources.
Right. And move on in their giant spaceships to mine other planets. It was kind of it wasn't everybody focused on that aspect of it, but that aspect of the talk was very nightmaric. You know, I mean, the idea of any foreign force coming and harvesting your planet, that's spooky.
Indeed. So if you want to send us an email about Stephen Hawking or your favorite scientists out there, do. We're at sciencestuff@howstuffworks.com. We love hearing from you guys.
Or hit us up on Twitter, where we're Lab Stuff, and Facebook, where we're Stuff from the Science Lab.
That's all we got. Thanks for listening, guys.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the howstuffworks.com homepage.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.